So hi, today we heard about some threats that users of mobile phones face. So those include abuse of app permissions, surveillance of personal communication, and so forth. I'm going to talk about a different kind of threat, one that is far less sophisticated, but I'll try to convince you that it is also important. So the threat I'm talking about is snooping attacks. And what I mean is one person physically getting access to someone else's phone and going through their data without permission. So typically, those two people will know each other. They'll be romantic partners or maybe coworkers, friends, or any kind of social tie that would create opportunities for physical access, and also a social tie that would justify an interest in private details of the other person's life. So snooping attacks are especially problematic because of some of their features. First, they are easy to conduct. You don't need any special skills to do a snooping attack. Secondly, their objective is often just information gathering, not account hijacking, not abuse of accounts, not to profit from the attack, not to cause harm to the device or to the data. It means that the attacker doesn't really need a lot of time to conduct the attack. And third, what we call the insider superpowers. Insiders, or people that are socially close to the victim, often have multiple opportunities, not only to conduct the attack, but also, for instance, to observe the authentication secret if there is one. They often have some knowledge about their target so that they know exactly what to look for. And finally, they are motivated to attack a specific person. So in theory, snooping attacks seem to be problematic. But in practice, they are only problematic if they are somewhat common. If they aren't really happening that much, maybe you should focus on other threats. So to convince you and ourselves that the threat of snooping attacks is actually important as a security issue, we thought we'd measure how common are snooping attacks. So we did. And I'm going to start by showing you the top line result, and then I'll tell you how we got there. So here is the top line result. In a sizable sample of Mechanical Turk workers, the estimated one-year prevalence of conducting snooping attacks was 30%, which is to say that an estimated 30% identified with this statement, in the past 12 months, I have looked through someone else's phone without their permission. And notice that I said estimated prevalence, not the proportion of participants who explicitly indicated that they identified with this statement. That is, of course, because if you were to ask people directly, many wouldn't answer honestly. So I imagine that you have some questions about this number. So the rest of this presentation is structured like a Q&A. And to answer question one, how can that question be asked? I'm going to talk about a bit of a survey technique we used called the list experiment, which is designed specifically to address sensitive questions. And to answer questions two and three, how was the prevalence estimate obtained and who is more likely to conduct snooping attacks? I'm going to go a bit into the empirical data we gather in two of the studies that are reported in the paper. So first, how was the question asked? How can we ask people if they snooped on others and expect them to answer honestly? So one way to do it is with a list experiment. You also might know it by the unmatched count technique or the item count technique. This is a well-known survey technique for self-incriminating questions. It has been around at least since the 70s when it was formally described by Ragavaro and Federer. And here's how it works. So each participant is randomly assigned to be either in the control group or in the treatment group. Participants in the control group receive a list of items, and they are asked to say how many, not which ones, they identify with. And participants in the treatment group receive an extra item in the list. So this will be the item that we're trying to measure. So we now can estimate the proportion of people that were identified with the extra item just by taking the difference in means. And if you don't see how this is happening, I prepared a little example. So imagine a population where everyone loves bananas and rainbows, and everybody hates to stand in line. And also imagine that in this population, half the people love marijuana, and the other half hates it. So in the control group, everyone would answer two, referring to bananas and rainbows. So the average would be two. In the treatment group, half the people would still answer 2, bananas and rainbows, but half the people would answer 3, bananas, rainbows, and marijuana. So the mean would be 2.5, and if you take the difference, as expected, is 0.5, which is half the population. All right, I hope I convinced you. So to answer question 1, how was the question asked? Well, one way is with a list experiment. All right. Okay. So moving on to question 2, how was the prevalence estimate obtained? So I'll just give you an outline of our design before we go into more detail about the trends. You can see even more details in the paper. So here is the list that we used. So the control group had a list with 4 items relating to mobile security and privacy, which are the ones in grayish color. So these items were selected based on another study that I'm not discussing today, but you can find in the paper. But the basic idea is that we wanted to find a mix of control items that were either very low prevalence or medium prevalence, so as to avoid ceiling and floor effects, which is to say, so as to increase possible deniability. So the control list also has, you can see, 2 attention check items, the ones in blue, that seem a bit weird, those are attention checks. And those were added because, well, there's another study in the paper that we show why they are necessary. The treatment group had the same items as the control, plus the statement about snooping attacks that you saw before, which you can see underlined. The particular wording was also determined in a study that we're not reporting, that I'm not talking about, but is reported in the paper. So the survey was filled to Mechanical Turk, only to workers in the U.S., supposedly. So after the list question, we asked only very few demographic questions. We did not want to have many questions or questions that were too specific because that would decrease the sense of anonymity. So we only asked about gender, age, which you can see there, distribution, level of education, state of residency, and whether participants were smartphone owners or not. And this, I'll come back to these variables later. So we had 1,381 valid responses, about evenly divided between the treatment and the control group. Demographically, we had some diversity, and the experimental groups were very similar demographically, as would be expected by random assignment. So here's just how the top-line result was calculated. The mean number of items selected by participants that received the first list was 2.517. The mean number of items selected by participants in the treatment group was 2.825. The difference is 0.308. So the estimated prevalence is 30%. All right, so just before we move on, we did a little another thing. We adjusted the Mechanical Turk data to the U.S. 2010 census data. And the adjusted estimate is about 20% of U.S. adults having had conducting snooping attacks in the year before the survey was conducted. So this was done by cell-based post-stratification. And there's a difference between the 30 and the 20 because the U.S. population is older and more gender-balanced than our sample. So we now answer question 2, and we can move on to the interesting part, analyzing the trends in the data. So the question is, who is more likely to conduct snooping attacks? And to answer this question, we need to build a concise model that we can understand of the likelihood of snooping on others based on the few demographic variables that we had collected. So we have to look at which variables had more predictive power. We did it by running with each of the variables regressions on how many items were selected, controlling for group assignment. And in this exercise, what we found was that gender, education, region were not very strong predictors, and age and smartphone ownership, on the contrary, seemed to be the very good predictors. So we built a model, a regression model, of the estimated likelihood of having conducted snooping attacks based on age and smartphone ownership. And this graph shows what that model looks like, I hope. So younger people are more likely to snoop on others. In fact, the younger participants, the youngest participants, in that group, this behavior seems to be prevalent. So the majority of them have done it in the period of 1 year. The likelihood is sharply less as people get older. And people that have smartphones are themselves more likely to snoop on others. So looking at this model, it appeared to us that if it was the younger smartphone owners that were snooping more on others, then there must be something about this population in terms of how they use their phones. So we decided to do a follow-up study to see if there was a relationship between snooping on others and having a kind of usage which we called deep, meaning that the person uses the phone in such a way that it keeps lots of private data. So the logic behind this is that when people have a deep kind of usage, they will learn by their own experiences what kinds of sensitive information they could get access to if they were to snoop. And to see if this was true, we conducted another list experiment. This time we recruited specifically smartphone owners. We removed demographic questions aside from age, and we added a scale of degree of adoption or depth of adoption that we created based on existing survey data on privacy-sensitive usage. So just to give you an idea, this is what the scale looks like. There were 10 items that participants rated from 1 to 7 based on how frequently they felt they did each of these things. For instance, one of the items asked if participants went on social networks frequently, another if they looked up health conditions, and so forth. So for each participant, we added the responses to each individual item, and we get a depth of adoption variable with a range from 10 to 70, 70 being extremely deep adoption. So we deployed this neural experiment to Mechanical Turk. We gathered 653 valid responses. With this new data, we built another regression model of likelihood of having engaged in snooping attacks in the year prior, but this time based on the response to the scale and controlling for age. So we can clearly see that there is indeed a positive relationship between adopting smartphones more deeply and engaging in snooping attacks. This is illustrated by that trend line going up as the depth of adoption score goes up. So what we can conclude is that among smartphone owners, those that adopted technology more deeply are also more likely to snoop on others. All right. So this answers, I hope, the last question. Who is more likely to conduct snooping attacks? From our models, it seems like younger people, smartphone owners, and especially those who adopted the smartphones more deeply are more likely to snoop on others. So I guess you still have a lot of questions. Some of them are answered in the paper. We did a first study to select the appropriate items for the list. We then did an experiment to see if list experiments on Mechanical Turk actually are good at estimating behaviors. And for that, we use behaviors that we know the prevalence. We then did those two studies that I talked about. The first one, we obtained the top line estimate and the first model, and in study four, we created the last model that I showed you. So to conclude, in a series of survey experiments, we found that snooping attacks are very common, especially among some population segments. So for snooping attacks to be so common, it means they must be relatively easy to do, which for me means that we're not providing users with what they need to secure their phones. We should take into consideration that insiders have superpowers that strangers typically don't have. So, and this concludes my presentation. I welcome your questions.
Stuart Schechter, Microsoft Research. If my wife doesn't have contact, we have a shared friend, and I'm asleep and she needs to contact that friend, and she goes into my phone and goes to get that contact information, I think she would be answering yes to your question that you classify as a snooping attack, but I wouldn't really call that a snooping attack. Are you worried that you're overcounting snooping attacks?
So we looked into that into the first study, and the basic idea is that looking through has a very specific connotation when you put it in this context. I don't think that people misunderstand this question in any way. And the way we know it is that we tried four different wordings, ones that were more specific, ones that were not, and the rates were approximately the same. So, but...
You think. Do you have evidence?
Yeah. Study one in the paper shows four different wordings and that the provinces were about the same.
I think this is really cool. I just wonder, you did many different Turk experiments. Did you try and make sure that people didn't take the survey, all three of them, so like you oversampled some person in some way? And, and even if you did, could you control for that in these kind of measurements?
So we prevented repeated participation using the known method of assigning a specific qualification.
Yeah. That's good.
I think I'd just like to follow up on Stuart's question. Right. Did you have any cognitive testing or anything or any kind of open-ended interpretations? Because the four questions that I just glanced at the paper, so I may not have understood. The four questions that I saw, I think, would be subject to the same issue that Stuart raised, that people, even if they went to, for example, use somebody else's, like YouTube on someone else's phone, they might very plausibly answer yes. And so it would be helpful to have insight from you about what people were understanding when they answered those questions.
The only qualitative data that we have for that is from pilot studies that people seem to understand what the question was. Of course, it's open to interpretation. Some people will feel that this doesn't qualify as an attack. I think the part says without permission pretty much puts this in the attack category, because if it's without permission, it's a violation of an access policy. Even if it's not enforced by any technical means, it's an access policy. So without permission for me means that.
Okay.
In
Thank
that context.
You.
Just follow up on this question from Stuart, from you. I think in the example that Stuart gave, if most likely they both have some prior kind of agreement, implicit or explicit, that it's okay for his wife to do that. If they didn't have that agreement, if Stuart would feel that it's violation of his privacy when she looks up on his phone, that would be counting as snooping attack. So it depends, again, on the explicit or implicit agreement between
Just let me add that in services, it's very hard to get perfect identification between something we can ask people and they can understand and really the construct that we think is a snooping attack. It's really hard. So there's a compromise. We could have written a statement that was very, very specific, and they excluded some cases and included others. But then in that case, it would be very clear what we were asking people. Sorry?
It's an attack if you don't approve of it, right? Or they would be upset about it. So if you can make easy words, clear wording, which is in a way they would not approve of, that would have made it very clear that it's an attack rather than a gray area.
But then the same question could be raised. What does it mean getting approval or not? Right? It's an identification problem. We can follow up this offline.
Just a question. Did you have some question where you asked the users, the participants, whether they actually snoop directly, so that you know if you ask people how many times, or whether you snoop on other people's phone directly, how much is the percentage? That way you know, for example, like if you get 50% of people saying yes, then you know how many people are lying. if you ask them indirectly by
denying
indirectly.
So there are already, this question was already asked directly before this study. It was asked in a, instead of the yearly estimate we wanted to get, it was asked for a lifetime question. Have you ever used someone else's phone to look at their data without their permission or without their authorization? I don't remember the exact phrasing. And the rate for that was about
9%.
9%? 9% in the MTurk example. Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to ask about, so I understand the age part of it, but I don't understand the smartphone. So do we have any sort of data about how many people in the older generations have smartphones that are prevalent to this versus how many people in the younger generation that you tested have smartphones, just to have a comparison?
So,
do
you mean if there's a correlation between being young and having a smartphone?
Basically, yeah. So if you can imagine that being older, you don't have as many smartphones, then that could imply some results are more biased in the study.
Oh, yeah. So it is true. I think the correlation is about it's positive 0.3, I think. In the data we have, there's something other data about that. But the thing is that the regression, you control for those factors.
Okay.
So you're asking for smartphone owners or non-owners controlling for age. So
okay,
it really, for the model, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Thanks, Yogo again.